He said that once there was a store owner who was somebody came in to buy something in the store, and they were draining him a cup and wasting a lot of his time. And he thought it was going to be a big order. In the end, the guy walked out and didn't buy a thing. And the person was very, very misyash. He felt terribly. He just wasted so much time. Then an hour later, another person walks in 1 second, and he says, okay, I want a $10,000 order, and he walks out. So the person realized that the gzeira was he has to do his shtadlus in order to be matzliach, but there doesn't have to be a correlation between the shtadlus and the hatzlocha. So he was nigzim and shemam. He has to spend 10 hours wasting time with meicha number one, with kaita number one, and then he knows that Yeshua comes from somewhere else. But the same thing over here. I said, we have no idea what we were doing for the last 20 minutes. We were draining a cup to try to get the thing to work. And then all of a sudden it works out. As we closed it and we were messiah, all of a sudden it comes back to life. So you never know. So Kodesh Baruch Hu is a different Kodesh Baruch Hu. Baruch Hashem, we're here and we're able to begin the sugya. That's all that matters right now. Okay. Okay, so let's just put ourselves back into the spirit of things in terms... Henry, I think you're going to have to mute all the people except for me.
Okay. Okay, everybody's muted except for Rebbe.
Okay, so let's just put ourselves back into the swing of things from last week. We really had one basic question, one basic part of a sugya that we're focusing on. And that is the Gemara that tells us that if a person consumes something based on tam ki'ikar, so it's also ve'ein lo'ikin alav. So what he did was prohibited, but in terms of malchus, you're not going to receive malchus. And the question is, what conclusion can we draw from that? So we saw different nuances of Rishonim, but there are a couple of basic tracks that the Rishonim are taking. One track was, in a sense, the simplest, most straightforward track, and that's Rashi. The reason why there's no malchus is because there's no issur d'oraisa, and that would commit us to believing that tam ki'ikar is only a prohibition midrabbanan. That was Rashi's approach. Rabbi Tam was the totally other extreme. The tam ki'ikar must be d'oraisa, and the Gemara that seems to say there's no malchus, that's not even talking about tam ki'ikar, that's talking about min b'mino. So again, mina kotz la kotz are two extremes. Rashi, tam ki'ikar is the rabbanan no malchus. Kodesh Baruch Hu, tam ki'ikar is for sure d'oraisa with malchus. And this Gemara is not even talking about tam ki'ikar. Then we saw other Rishonim who differentiate and say tam ki'ikar is d'oraisa sometimes, and the Gemara of Avodah Zarah is talking about when that sometimes criteria aren't met. What are the criteria? So the criteria are kizayis bechdei achilas pras. There's so much treifas in there that if you would eat the entire mixture, you would consume a kezias within X amount of time. Within that sheet that we saw different nuances, Rambams and Chaims, and a lot of different nuances as to what the details of that sheet are, but the bottom line is that one sheet was that sets the third track, the third approach, that the reason why there's no malchus is because you're missing the volume, it's the quantity to require malchus. Then we had the fourth track, and again, even within each track, there are nuances, where the fourth track was, yes, it's deraisa, it's an absolute deraisa, but it's falling short in terms of malchus for a variety of reasons. Why is it falling short in terms of malchus? What are some of the reasons why it's falling short in terms of malchus? So the Taisus quoted from the Rimi Linz, it's falling short because it's only an Isser Aseh, it's not a Los Aseh. And then we saw the Raivid at the end of the Shiur on Friday, it's falling short because the Isser of Tam Kikr is ultimately derived either based on a Kal V'Chomer from Nazir or based on a Mematzinu from Gyulei Nochem of Kashrin Kalim. And since these kinds of Isurim that are not explicit prohibitions, not explicit Lavim of the Torah, by definition will not warrant Malchus. So again, so we have the Rashi track, we have the Tam track, the Kzazik and the Spras track, and now we're focusing today on the low level listeners, only a Kal V'Chomer, only a Mematzinu, and therefore there's no malchus. So the question is, what does that mean? Why is the fact that it's only a Kal V'Chomer or only a Mematzinu, why does that result in no malchus? So the Rishonim quoted a principle called Ein Onshin Min Adin. So if we take a look at the 13th of the Mamakomus, where we left off on Friday, let's pick it up with the Rashba once again. It's the second to last line of the Rashba, where the Rashba tells us, that even though Tam Kikar is really the Raisa, the Rashba holds, There's still no malchus. Why? The afidan le minazir lerabanan, omigule nochem Rabbi Akiva. Says the Rashba, you pick and choose whichever one you want. You want the source to be nazir. You want the source to be kasher and kelim, yule nochem. The machlekes Rabbi Akiva and the rabanan. Either source will not warrant malchus. Why? Because there's no malchus neither for something derived from a hekesh, nor from something derived from kavachomer. Kavachomer means that A is more chomer than B. Hekesh means they're comparable. They're in the same level. Memetzino real doesn't really mean a literal hekesh. What is that based on? So the Rashba is clearly invoking a principle that appears in Makos and in Sanhedrin called Ein Onshin Min Adin, that you don't give an onesh, you don't give a punishment in this world for something derived from a kavachomer. But the Chiddush of the Rashba is extending that principle to things that are derived from Memetzinos as well. Things that are derived from parallel halachas, things that are derived from equal level halachas, not things that are necessarily involved in kal v'chomer, not only an onshin and a din, not only an onshin and kal v'chomer, but even an onshin and mematzino, things which are on equal playing field. And the question, should that be so or not? There's a chiddush go of the Rashba. So there is a big machlekes acharonim. Why is it that an onshin and a din? What is this all about? Yes, we know it's a pasuk, we know it's a source, we know there's a halacha. But what's the rationale of this din of Ein Onshin Min Hadin? So we mentioned very end of the Shia on Friday, we mentioned the Maharshon Sanhedrin that says, the reason why Ein Onshin Min Hadin is because if the issur that you're discussing is in fact more chomer than the previous issur, how do you know that a Kodesh Baruch wants to give you the privilege of kapara? Getting an onesh of Misa or Malkus is not just an onesh, but it's a chaper as well. And we don't really know that maybe the kapara was only given for the lower level isurim. Maybe for the high level isurim, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Lo sagle kapara." The kapara of Beis Din Shamat is not sufficient. Maybe such a person never has to wait for the Din Shamayim. So therefore, we as Beis Din, our hands are tied. We can only be manish people when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says. We can only invoke kapara. We can only attain kapara when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says to do so. Once it's past the point of what state in the Chumash, it's already out of our control, it's out of our hands, and therefore we have no right to give you an onesh because we have no right to give you that privilege, so to speak, of kapara. If that is the lumdus of Ein Onshin Min Hadin, then it would clearly not apply to hekeshos. It wouldn't apply to mematzinos. It would only apply when B is more chomer than A. So now let's plug that into our sugya. We have two different approaches in the Tanoim as to what is the source for Tam Kikar. Either Tam Kikar is derived from Nazir, or it's derived from Trefer Kalim. If it's derived from Nazir, then it's a Kavachomer from Nazir. The Gemara says explicitly, Nazir is a very low-level Isser. It only applies to this fellow. It's going to be done after 30 days. You can be Matan Nether on it. There are so many leniencies that other Isserim don't have. So if Tam Kikar applies to Nazir, how much more so Kavachomer to other Isserim? Wait, says the Rashba. If you use the phrase, how much more so, that means you're going down the route of a kal v'chomer. If you're talking the language of kal v'chomer, so then you're in trouble. Ein Onshin Min Hadin is going to knock it out of the box for you. So comes the Rashba and says, if we're learning Tam Kikar from Nazir, so you can't give Malkus. That I understand. But the Rashba didn't stop at that. The Rashba said, and even if you're learning it from Gulei Nochrim, you also can't give it Onesh. Why? Because a malkin alakesha, so we'll be calling him Mematzino. Gyule Nochrim is not more chomer or more kal than anything else. It's just a simple example of a din ha-Torah. If the Torah gives us a din in A, we can extrapolate to similar areas B, C, D, E, F. We can extrapolate from Gyule Nochrim to Nevelus, Dreyfus, Chazer, etc. But that's not a kavachomer. That does not have the bad term kavachomer linked to it. And it's not a kavachomer. How did the Rashba know that Ein Onshin Min Hadin applies? But the Rashba was going like the Maharsha, that Ein Onshin Min Hadin is based on the idea of we can't give you a kapara because you don't deserve a kapara. That's going to break down. Plus, with Tam Kikar is Gilei Nochrim. So it's clear that the Rashba must have had a different understanding of Ein Onshin Min Hadin. The question is, what was that other understanding? What is the alternate way of understanding Ein Onshin Min Hadin that would carry it over not just for kal v'chomers, that would equally apply to mematzinos, acacias, etc., which would make sense of this Rashba. So there are a group of acharonim who have a totally different understanding of what Ein Osher Beis Din is all about. And it's really something that touches, in a sense, in Kol HaTorah Kula. We know that even within the world of Torah Sheba Peh, there are different types of Torah Sheba Peh, there are different gradations of Torah Sheba Peh. And we all say the Yigyu Midah, Shetan Reshes, Kavachom, Zerishav, etc. But they're not all quite the same in the following sense. The Gemara says explicitly that Kal V'Chomer Adam Don Me'atzmo. A person can make up their own Kal V'Chomer as long as it makes sense. Now, there are rules that govern Kal V'Chomers. There are concepts that were Nimset Demesh Rabbeinu. The idea of Kal V'Chomer was Nimset Demesh Rabbeinu, but it was Nimset Demesh Rabbeinu. It was given to Demesh Rabbeinu with its own world of understanding. You can only make a Kal V'Chomer in such a way. There's a concept of a Pirchan Kal V'Chomer. There's a principle of dayo, that a Kal V'Chomer, the thing you're learning, can't end up being surpassing the original source. There are many, many details that govern Kal V'Chomer. But at the end of the day, if I have a good Kal V'Chomer, I can invoke the Kal V'Chomer. And any din that I will derive based on the Kal V'Chomer, if the Kal V'Chomer stands the test and it meets the criteria of Kal V'Chomer, then any din derived from the Kal V'Chomer becomes binding min haTorah. You can have machloksim in Kal V'Chomer. I could dash a Kal V'Chomer one way, and you could ask a pircha, and I could think your pircha is not a pircha, and then we have to go to Beis Din, and Beis Din has to be done on what the din is, and then you follow Achrei Rav Matas, whoever the Rav of the Sanhedrin thinks. So this is common. We find this throughout the Gemara. There's many, many issues of Kal V'Chomer that came up. One Tana said one way, one Tana disagreed, etc. But the idea of Kal V'Chomer is that it's a midah that was given to Basam Adam. We can use our own chachma, our own seichel, and use it properly within the guidelines, parameters of the Torah, and come up with dinim deraisa. In contrast to other midos, let's say, for example, Gzeir Shava, you can't do that. I can't say, it says, Vaydaber Shava Moshe Lema. Ooh, it says the word Lema over here, and it's take the word Lema over there. So let's make the following. I'm going to make up a Gzeir Shava. And you're going to say, no, I think let's do a different Gzeir. No, that doesn't work. Ain't Adam done Gzeir Shava, Elam came, Kiba Merabim Sinai. You have to have a tradition to be done Gzeir Shava. You can't make up a Gzeir Shava. So again, any din that's derived from Gzeir Shava becomes elevated to a deraisa. Any din that's derived from Kal V'Chomer is elevated to a deraisa. But in terms of the what gave us the authority to in a sense, you know, invoke these midos is very, 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 very different. One is based on pure mesora. One is based on, in a sense, human logic. So come a group of Rachmanim and say, it's because of this that Kal V'Chomer parts ways with other of the midos for the following reason. That imagine the following tragic scenario. We have a shayla that comes up, and we're not sure, was the person chayav misa not? So the Beis Din sitting and trying to figure out, is he chayav misa not? So it doesn't say the favor should be chomesh is chayav misa. So one dayan will say, oh, I have a gebalka kal v'chomer. Madoch ye chayav misa for this, kal v'chomer ye chayav misa for that. And the other dayan will say, no, I have a pircha. And they'll back and forth, and we'll take a vote, and it'll go 20-3, and Beis Din of Din Nefashos. 20 dayanim says, Chai Misa, 3 says, Pot for Misa. 20 dayanim accepted the Kal V'Chomer, 3 rejected it. So Achrei Matzos, you should put the person to death. So we kill the person, and then a week later, somebody raises another pircha in the Kal V'Chomer. Gee, you know what? I have a new pircha. And the Beis says, gee, you know what? That's a really good pircha. Oh, let's reevaluate the Kal V'Chomer. Oh, by golly, the Kal V'Chomer was wrong. Gee, the Kal V'Chomer is off the books. That's very nice, but unless you have the koyach of Elyonov through Mechaya Mason, we got a big problem here. So you just killed somebody based on a midas boss of a dom that's nitan to be changed. And Gezer Shav is never nitan to be changed. Once a Gezer Shav is given to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's here to stay, it's never going to be revoked. Kal V'Chomer is a kind of a midah that theoretically could be revoked. And since it could theoretically be revoked, you're asked. You're opening yourself up for trouble. You're opening yourself up for disaster. So you want to pass in Shabbos in a Sefer Hefta. You want to tell a person, don't be Mechal Shabbos because Kal V'Chomer dictates this may be Chil Shabbos. That I can accept. You want to tell a person, don't eat this piece of meat because Kal V'Chomer dictates that this meat is treif. I can understand. You want to turn around and invoke an Einish HaGuf. You want to punish somebody. How are you going to rectify that? How are you going to undo that? So we have no right to punish either Misa or Malkus. It's also like a shtickle and a shaguf. It's also like a shtickle Misa. We have no right to invoke the principle of Kal V'Chomer because Kal V'Chomer is a type of a midah that may be undone. If that's the case, so that many Acharonim write, the same would be true with a Mematzinu. Mematzinu is not halacha mashum sinai. Mematzinu means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu that we have a right to derive parallel halachas from one another. That if halacha is true in case A, then it may very well carry over to case B, unless there's a pircha, unless there's a kasha, unless there's a refutation. And if there's a refutation, then in Lloyd Mills, it'll turn out that the limud was not accurate, was not correct in the first place. So therefore, come Vechorim and say, just as ain't ein shem in adin, because you're opening yourself up for a potential change, and we can never ever undo giving an ein shaguf, the same concern would be true for a mematzino as well. And maybe that's what the Rashba is driving at. So the Rashba says that we cannot punish you for tab kikar. We just can't do it. If you want to know a psak, is it issa deraisa? Yes. Issa deraisa? Yes. Punishment? No. Because our hands are tied. We cannot punish you. We cannot give you misa. We cannot give you malchus based on human midos, because human midos are subject to change. And you cannot manage somebody in a situation where you may have to undo, you have to unravel that onus in the future. So again, a fascinating insight, really, which touches on a whole concept of Tesha Bapeh. It's mashlama of the Vedoyim. It's not really asugi, but it's a fascinating potential application of this idea that some dini Torah are absolutely written in stone in the sense of that it's impossible for them to be subject to change. Let's say you're never ever going to have a beis that's going to say, you can light a fire on Shabbos. That's okay. Why? Because the Torah says you can't. So the Torah says, Lo sabar reish b'chomash v'sech miyom Shabbos. Any person who says, no, we think that didn't change, that's a kaifa b'Torah. The Zosa Torah, the Rambam says that the absolute yisoda, yisodas of all Ramuna is that Zosa Torah lo t'imuchlef, the Torah is not going to change. So the Pesukim and Chumash are not going to change. The pure halacha of Sinai are not going to change. Let's say, Lamashal, somebody gets up and says, for the last 3,000 years, tefillin had to be black. But from now, I think based on my lumdas, tefillin should be green. So that's sheka v'chazam. That's nothing to discuss. Because if we believe Emunah Shleima is a nimsa, ish v'pishad, mesh rabbeinu, tefillin has to be black. If somebody comes and says they're changing it, that's like saying that Zos HaTorah Tei Mukhlefes, which is Chalila, which is Kvira Mamish. So anything that was either Tashi B'Sav or anything that was a clear-cut halacha Moshe B'Sinai is never, ever subject to change. However, let's say you have a din that was being followed because of a Kavachaymer, because of a Hekesh, according to many, according to Mematzinos, because of Svaras, things of that nature, Drushas, those kinds of things, a later Beis Din may unravel. The Rambam writes this explicitly in Hilchos Mamre, because to Yerushalmi it says explicitly that in the realm of Midah Shetan and Drushas Mam, with the exceptions of those that are Nimsa Ishra Pishar Meshur Abedu, potentially a Beis Din can undo a previous Beis Din. The Gemara talks about Beis Din Shal Rishonim Amukach. You can have a later Beis Din if the later Beis Din can disprove the arguments of the first Beis Din, so that even what was Mekubal as a Din Deraisa in the original generation may theoretically change. That's the Parsha of the Torah of Basla Shefer Sheyir B'Yomahem. That you have to go to the Dayanim in your generation. All the Mefarshim explained, the Rambam, and Kesamishta, and the Mechonar, and the Chaznish, and another time, another place, as to why that ability to change ended at the end of the Tkufas HaGemara. Once Chazal paskin the loss in a certain way, so then nobody today in Tavshin Peik get up and say, I'd like to argue with Rav Ashi, please. So for a variety of reasons, that's off the chart. That's not an option. Again, another time, another place. But within a certain period of time, so Rabbi Meir could say something, and then a Tana 50 years later may Taka disagree. And even though it was Oskapaskin, it was Nimnu Vagomru, it was decided like Rabbi Meir in one generation, it could be undone in the next generation, which is exactly what's potentially going on here. That's what these Acharonim say. That's exactly why we have to be so careful before we meet out a Misas Bezin or an Onishamal, because to make sure that this is not a type of halacha that is subject to change. So there's a fascinating vort from the Brisker Rav, really Brisker Rav doesn't need my stamp of approval, but a fascinating vort from the Brisker Rav that actually appears in the Brisker Rav in his Perish and Chumash. At the end of his Perish and Chumash, he has some things on other Svarim and Tanakh as well, and he has this one on Megillas Rus. The Gemara comments in Maseches Yevamos about the whole discussion that took place at the end of Megillas Rus between the Goel and Boaz. That means Boaz is trying to redeem the field, and he announces that whoever's going to redeem the field has to marry Ruth as well. So the Goel steps forward. He was the first in line. He was the one who really should have redeemed the field first. And he turns around to Boaz and he says, I don't want to marry Ruth, but Ashchisas Nachlasi, because my Nachla is going to be ruined. So the Gemara says, what does it mean my Nachla is going to be ruined? So Nachla refers to your future. He said, I'm afraid that my children may be also Levobakol, because Rus is from Moab. And I don't want to risk marrying her, because then someone's going to tell me in 100 years, so now that my children cannot marry the Klai, because they're going to have the stigma of being from Moab. So it's a big, big pella, this Gemara. Memonoshach, the Biskra, Briskitar, Lomdashitar, Memonoshach, the Gemara, Shver. Why? He says, what was the goal thinking? Did the goal agree? Boaz had already announced that there's a din of Moabim Lomoabis. It was already decided there's a din that female descendants of Moab are permitted to Lavobakal, and therefore they wouldn't bring that stigma along. So, Memonoshach, did the goal accept that? Did the goal buy into this drush of Moabim Lomoabis? If he did, what's he kvetching about? What's he worried about? So it was already paskin that it was mutter. So his children's grandchildren will be mutter. If he didn't agree to the drasha, maybe he was a great tamachav. It could be he was also a girl of a Torah. We don't know. We know who he was, but we don't know about his learning ability. Maybe he was entitled to an opinion. And maybe he said, no, I don't think that's right. I think there's no din of muav v'la muavis. I think that Rus is asur l'vavakol. If he really believed that she was asur l'vavakol, so then he should have said, I don't want to marry her because I don't want to violate an aveira because I think it's asur. So why is he chepering about his children? If he thought it was mutter, so that it's not going to affect his children. If he thought it was asur, so that it's also for him also. So why the emphasis on nachalasi, on the future, on the next generations? So the Brisker Rav gives a lomdish insight. The Brisker Rav says what the goal was saying was as follows. He's saying to Boaz, I believe you 100%, you're drasha. You just darshaned and Boaz explained why. The Gemara says because the Yisra is only for the people who could have gone forward with the water and the women couldn't go. Yeah, whole chadad, whole drasha deraisa, as to explain why Rus is muteris levabakol. Says the goal to Boaz, I'm asking 1,000%. It's het gomer for you to marry her. I'm not complaining about marrying her, but he says to Boaz, your drasha is your drasha. Means you're Darshi, you're the Gungador, you're the Shaifit, you're the Sanhedrin, you're Darshi, and you're entitled to do so. And I'm asking, I think that you're right. But it's possible that in 50 years from now, another Bezin may come up and say, you know what? I don't think that Drasha was right. I think Boaz made a mistake. And what's the ramifications of that? So Boaz is already long gone. So Boaz already did what he did, and in Shemayim, he's not punished for what he did, because it's called Lefishitas, Lefi Havana Satira, what he did was permissible. So clapping him, it was okay. But once the later Beis Din in 50 years from now paskins that what happened 50 years ago was Osir, then Igloy Milsa that these children now, 50 years from now, are Moavim and the Psulim Levabakol. So that's what the goal says. The Moav says, how are you going to assure me? How can you tell me to marry Rus? I'm willing to marry Rus, but if I have children with her, I'm going to always be worried that in 50 years, some Beis Din is going to overturn the Psach. So Penash Chisas Nachalasi, that's exactly what Chazal say, that the goal was terrified to marry Rus, not for his own skin, not for his own Averi. What he was doing was Mutter, because he was given the green light by the Beis Din. But he was given the green light by this Beis Din. If he vase, who knows what's going to happen in the later Beis Din. So that's what Boaz said, no, you misunderstood. The Gemara says that, at the end of the story, the Gemara says that they explained that this is not a drosha that Moabim lo Moabis. This is not something that, gee, we thought about, we figured out, we sat around and we dashed in the psukim and another base is going to change it. Kach nemra halacha moshu mesinei amanim lo Moabis. Kach nemra halacha mesinei rusas boteres. It's a given, it's never going to change. This din of Moabim lo Moabis is not that type of Torah Shabbat Peh, like Kavachemis, it's nita to changes. This is the stuff, this is the Torah Shabbat Peh that's not going anywhere. This is the Torah Shabbat Peh that's always going to remain the same. So therefore, no Beis Din ever can question this. This is halacha Moshe. This is it. This is not negotiable. And therefore, there's nothing to worry about. And the goal wouldn't buy into that. The goal thought that, yeah, the din is right, but potentially subject to change. And Boaz, no, it's not subject to change. It's never going to change. It's there. It's here to stay. And therefore, you don't have to worry about marrying this girl. Whatever will happen 1,000 years from now, the children will be shared with Bekol. So that interplay, that lomdus bamsha, the brisker was azab brisker harifas, that the brisker of put into the Miestra. I don't know. When I read Megillah Rus on Shavuos morning, I didn't see all that. That's why he has to be the brisker of. So he saw this bamsha, this lomdus exchange between the goyel and Boaz, exactly highlighting what we're learning in the sugya in Chulin, is that some kind of dinim, some dinim derais are subject to change, some are not subject to change. This goes back about 14 years ago or so, where they had in Eretz Yisrael, they had a Shabbaton for alumni of YU who are living in Eretz Yisrael. Beautiful, beautiful Shabbaton. And they invited my wife and myself to come for that Shabbos to give Shiurim. So one of the if I'm not mistaken, I think it was also in the same time as the Chag HaSmicha. I think it was around like a week before the Chag HaSmicha. I think it was the weekend of the Chag HaSmicha back in America. I think that now that I remember correctly, right, we had to rush back on Motzei Shabbos to be back with the Chag HaSmicha the next day. So I forgot exactly how many years ago it was. So there were a whole series of shiurim, like the theme of the weekend was in Yad HaMisaira and Tashma Ben, you know, Rabbanus, things like that. So one of the shiurim that I gave that Shabbos was a whole week of like shiurim of that shiur that I gave that Shabbos was about this concept of, you know, the parameters of change in halacha, you know, when theoretically halacha can be overturned by a future basis and when not, when limitations, etc. So I told over this shtickle dar for the Brisker Rav in the middle just to highlight this nuance. So I remember after the shiur was over, so Rabbi Lam, should be well, so Rabbi Lam came over to me and he said, he was mesmerized by this Brisker Rav. He loved this shtickle tar for the Brisker Rav. Mamish caught his eye. He mamish loved it. He felt he had a tub. I hope you enjoyed the rest of the share also. But I remember he made a special point of saying that he mamish loved this Brisker Rav. It's a beautiful part, not just in of itself in terms of the lumdus and the amkus and how the Brisker Rav read Sukkim and Chumash with Gemaras, but it really opens up our eyes for asking also in terms of really, really concretizing this idea of Kavachemis versus other Midas, etc. So let us get back now to Tom Kiker. So when all the dust settles, we still have our running machlekes. We have our, I don't know whether you want to go to four camps, five camps, depending on how you're dividing up the camps already at this point, in terms of what our approach to Tam Kikar is. Is Tam Kikar only the Rabbanon? Is Tam Kikar Mamash Deraisa with Malkus? Is Tam Kikar Deraisa with Malkus sometimes? Is Tam Kikar Deraisa with never with Malkus for technical reasons? What the technical reasons are they because of essays, because of Kavachemes? If you collect all the nuances of what we said, I think the total number comes out to 8 Rishonim. You know, we may not have seen every single one of them. We saw about 5 or so, and again, there are nuances within Rishonim that may end up with a total of 8 different opinions, 8 different approaches to Tam Kikar. But now that we have this background, now we can take it to the next level, to the next part of the sugya, and it's going to be actually a little bit in Yom Diyema, because it actually touches on a Pesach sugya, so we can be yet a little bit of Shlosh Yom Kamachach also. So let's take a look at the 15th of the Marma Kamas now, at a Gemara Maseches Zvachim, of Ayin Chesem and Aleph. Omer Reish Lachish, HaPigol V'Anoyse V'Atomei. This fellow's got 3 pieces of meat in front of him, each one worse than the next. Each one is an Issa Gomer, the disaster, you're not allowed to eat. One is Pigol. So Pigol is the person brought the carbon. He did one of the avodas of the dam, having in mind to either eat part of the carbon or having in mind to market part of the carbon. The chutz l'zmanu, after the right time of the carbon. So he shechs the carbon. Hey, Mucham Zug, I'm going to eat this carbon next week. So the meat now becomes Pigol from this moment, even before next week, becomes Pigol right away. And anyone who eats Pigol is Chayv Karis. Or you have noiser, if you have a piece of meat that's nosa, that means the meat was mamish left over. So it was left over past the zman, the nosa menu abayker, if you eat nosa, you chayv karis as well. Or the hatamei, there are different degrees of issa tuma bekachim. If you're an adam tamei and you're eating meat, so then that's issa karis. If you're tar and you're eating meat, that's tamei, that's issa lav, whatever it is, it's tamei, it's a problem. So we have 3 pieces of 3 chatichas in front of me, each one osur. Shabolan Zebazeh, and now they all get mixed up together, and they end up eating all of them. So I would think, you chayef koris 3 times over, which is no potter, you're technically not chayef for any of them. Why? You won't believe this one, but we're going to invoke the principle of bitl barov, namely, the pigol is batel in the other 2 isurim. The noser is batel in the other 2 isurim. And the Tommy is bottled in the other 2 Isurim. So it turns out, Rabbi, which one did I violate? Point to be an Isur. What do you mean? You ate Pigol. No, I didn't. That Pigol was bottled Barov. Okay. You ate Nosa. No, I didn't. That Nosa was bottled Barov. You ate Tommy. No, I didn't. That Nosa was, that Tommy was bottled Barov. So bit the Barov, believe it or not, it's going to save me. So the Gemara says, Shema Minot Las. So we derive 3 different halachas from the statement. Shema Minot Isurim of Anzadazah. So first of all, who said there's a principle of bitl from one issa to another? We've been learning the sugyas of bitl, meaning a davra mutter can be mevatel a davra osur. We've been talking about chaza falling into chicken soup. We never heard about chaza and nevela being mevatel one another. Guess what? We heard it here for the first time. Isur mevatel zedzet. Ushmamino. And the second important derivation is no sintam barov lav deraisa. The Gemara said we have rov, but aren't they no sintam? Can't you taste? Can't you discern the taste of the bagel? Can you discern the taste of the nisa? Can you discern the taste of the tamei? So the Gemara says, don't you see from a shlokish that tam kikr is not diaraisa? Because we're saying you're not chayev. That means minatur, you didn't really do anything that was chayev gares. So isn't that a proof positive that tam kikr is lav diaraisa? That's the Gemara's second derivation. The third one we're going to leave out. It's a little bit more complicated. It's not really relevant for us right now. So we're going to focus on the second one. This is the key. This is the main part of our sugya. From Rish Lakish's discussion of the three pieces of meat mixed together, you see from here that Tam Kikr is not the Araisa. So towards the end of the second line, Masiv Rabba. Rabba posed the contradiction. Asa Isa min chitin min oirez. If you have a mixture, you have a dough that's partially wheat and partially rice, even if the majority may be rice. And now we know that all the halachas in the Torah that revolve around the word lechem, such as the mitzvah of hafrashas challah, such as the mitzvah of chilas matzah. The word lechem by definition means the five species of grains, the wheat, barley, etc. Rice is not one of them. So therefore, a person makes a dough from wheat and from rice. This is a mishnah maseches challah. As long as you can taste the wheat, so then there's an obligation to be mafish challah. Even though most of this mixture, most of the dough is rice. So you see from this Mishnah Challah that you have to separate Challah just simply because you can taste the wheat. But wait a second, if Rish Lakish is right that Tam Kikr is only Midrabanan, if Rish Lakish is right that we don't really reckon with Tam Kikr is not the rice, so we don't care about Tam in a Torah, why in the world do you have to separate Challah? Why do you say rov? Why do you say that the wheat is batil the rov of the rice? The wheat is giving tam. Who cares? The Gemara says, you're right. That min haTorah, you don't have to separate challah. Because min haTorah, the wheat is batil. But mit the Rabbanan, they made a takana called tam kikr. So the same takana sachamim that tells you that when chaza falls into your pot of potato soup, if you can taste the chaza, you can't eat it mit the Rabbanan. And the Gemara is assuming now tam kikr is the Rabbanan. The same Dirabanan that says you can't eat it is the same Dirabanan that says you have to be mafish challah. The Gemara says, no, not so fast. Look at the end of the mission challah. You can be yetze matzah with this mixture. If you have a mixture of dough and a little bit of wheat in it and a lot of rice in it, as long as you can taste the wheat, you're yetze the mitzvah deraisa matzah. That can't be with Dirabanan. Eating matzah is a mitzvah deraisa, reftach lematzahs. How can you use tam kikr, which is only a din mit derabanan, to enable you to fulfill your mitzvah deraisa? If you yaitse min haTorah matzah, it's a proof positive. This is tam min haTorah. Tam kikr is min haTorah. So that is going to contradict Rish Lakish. The Gemara says, no, we misunderstood Rish Lakish. Ela min b'she'en amina b'tayma, min b'mina b'ruba. The answer is very simple. Rish Lakish wasn't talking about tam. Rish Lakish was talking about three identical pieces of meat, same tasting, same called meats. I took three pieces of meat. One was pig, one was nice, and one was tamay. They're all the same min. Rish Lakish said, whenever you have min b'mina, we know this already. Min b'mina, there's no tam issue. So by min b'mina, Rish Lakish says, takatz batel berov. The Mishnah Challah, about Challah and Matzahs, talk about min b'she'en amina, rice and wheat taste differently. So when there's a difference in tastes, when there's a contrast in taste, then there's a pasha, then there's a din of tam kikr. So based on these four lines in Masechet Zvachim, we just derived a phenomenal yesod. We just derived the yesod that tam kikr is for sure the araisa, proof positive it works for matzah. It works the kula. We can invoke Tam Ki Iker not only to tell you have a problem in the Rabbanan, and not only to tell you have to be mafish cham in the Rabbanan, no, more, much, much more than that. Tam Ki Iker enables you to fulfill the mitzvah deraisa matzah. There is no way to refute that. It's a mishnah maseches challah, and therefore Tam Ki Iker must be deraisa. So if we walk away from this Gemara in Zavachim and Chesem and Aleph, it sounds like case closed. We finally came to a conclusion. Tam Ki Iker is deraisa, and that's the reason why you're yetzei matzah. Of course, the problem becomes half of the Rishonim don't think Tam Kikr is deraisa. What would Rashi say about this Gemara? What about Rishonim who say Tam Kikr is not always deraisa? What? How would anybody explain this Gemara? This seems to be an open and shut case. Tam Kikr is deraisa. The proof positive is matzah. So who would have thought almost 2 weeks before Pesach, we finally think we proved that from the din of matzah, from the oiris and the chitim together, it's a proof positive Tam Kikr is deraisa. It sounds like our sugya is over. Our sugya is far from over. Hopefully, tomorrow we have to pick up and see that how other Rishonim learned this Gemara. All the other Rishonim, the Ramban and the Rosh, or Ben Chaim, every Rishon has not what to say about this Gemara in order to explain as to why this Gemara is not the absolute end of the story. Hope that tomorrow we'll have to see the different ways the Rishonim addressed, tackled this Gemara. But as for now, the simple reading of this Gemara sounds very, very strong in the camp of those who are assuming that Tom Kiker is in fact there. So hopefully tomorrow we'll pick it up. But I'll try as the day goes on to see whether we can get our Zoom back on track, and we'll be in touch later. Okay. Sure. Everyone have a wonderful day. I hope everyone's feeling well, and everyone just keep on taking good care of yourselves.
Sure's number?
The what?
I'm sure.